Working Cows Podcast, Episode 104.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. It's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows podcast, and we are taking a little bit of a different approach today. We're going to mention cows, but we're not going to focus on cows because part of managing a successful ranch business is managing people and relationships and all of those things. And so I've got some guys from another podcast that I listen to called Not Another Baptist Podcast, and they have recently released a book called Replanting Rural Churches. And so I've invited them to join me for the podcast today and to talk about some of the keys that exist in faithful gospel preaching churches and how you can find a faithful gospel preaching church in your area. These two guys are very entertaining and enjoyable to talk to. So if you're not looking for a church, then you're still going to be entertained by just hearing these guys as they interact with each other, as I have witnessed and heard on their podcast. And also, you know, another thing about this just is a little by way of introduction, something that I would ask you to consider is that, you know, we are finding faithful churches, and we're not just choosing churches that serve our needs, but we're finding places that we can be involved in contributing to the work of the ministry in those local churches. And so we're going to start off today talking with Kyle Bierman, and then we're going to move on and hear from Matt Hensley. But first, we're going to hear from Kyle Bierman. So Kyle and Matt, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows podcast.
Yeah, man, thanks for having us. It's a joy to be with you.
So you guys have recently released a book called Replanting Rural Churches, and I myself am a pastor of a rural church and have been understanding a little bit more fully the challenges that people in rural contexts face as far as spirituality and just being a Christian and following Jesus. And so I guess I wanted to invite you guys on today to talk from that perspective about how people can face those challenges. And so I guess we should start with, what are those challenges?
So I think the biggest challenge that I experienced in a rural context when I was in an extreme rural context was just the isolationism. You know, I served 3.5 years in a church. We were in a community that was 90 miles from the closest Walmart, and the closest SBC pastor was about 45 miles away. Just, you know, this feeling that you're all alone. In our case, in Clayton, New Mexico, where I served, we were just out there on the prairie in the middle of nowhere, where there were not a lot of people, a whole lot of cows, and a whole bunch of wind. And just the sense that we were, in a lot of ways, I think, cut off from the rest of the world, which quite honestly is what leads a lot of people to live in places like that, because they don't want to interact in a big city. In our case, I mean, that was Amarillo, Texas, was considered the big city from where we were. And and so for the rest of us, you know, it seemed like the rest of the world was way out there, and we were kind of in our own little community bubble, I guess, was probably the biggest challenge for me in that context.
And I think another challenge that I've been seeing here is when a lot of people are all on their own and surviving kind of on their own, you know, hard work and all of that. But sometimes it's a little difficult to desire that community and being able to work together. A lot of guys just enjoy doing things around the church or whatever jobs it may be, just on their own, because that's what they're used to working with. They don't want necessarily company doing that kind of stuff, because they're used to just doing it on their own, doing it in their own way, that kind of deal. With that self-sufficiency. And so learning to lean on other people and having the community with your fellow brothers and sisters in Christ is sometimes not going to be as easy when you're not used to needing somebody else. You've learned how to survive on your own.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was thinking about that today after reading your book, which is very, very helpful, and I really appreciate the perspectives, and I'm going to read it more than once. Really helpful and practical tips at the end of each chapter and stuff. I really appreciated the time you guys put into that. But
yeah, we just we're going to read it more than once, buy it more than once.
Okay, sure. I'll just pass the used copy on to the pastor in the other community and just keep buying myself a new one.
Yeah, there you go.
But I really appreciated it. One of the things that, well, it's already having an impact on my ministry. I have always made a practice of praying through the membership list of whatever church I was at. This is the second church I've been at, but and so I picked that up today, and I was going through it. But the thing I did differently today than I've ever done is to send out some text messages, letting those individuals know that I had prayed for them, and it was kind of a little check in my head, like, ooh, this is maybe a little bit invasive for them, getting this text message from the pastor saying I was praying for you today, because it's kind of like, well, prayers for people who need it, you know, or
yeah, what,
you know,
have I done?
Yeah.
What are you calling it, pastor?
It's like when I make my rounds as a chaplain at the hospital, you walk in and say, hey, I'm the chaplain. I mean, eyes immediately perk up, like, am I dying? What are they? Why is the preacher contacting me?
Yeah. So, but that is definitely a challenge. Do you think of any specific ways that people, and we're talking to ranchers here on this podcast, do you think of any specific ways that we can help them overcome those challenges that they're facing?
Well, when I was a rancher, that never happened. So I've been on it.
I thought there was a story I had not heard yet.
Well, there is one story, and this will completely take away any credibility I have to your listeners, so I don't know if I should share it. But I was on a ranch once, and the guy that was helping me ride the horse or whatever was upset that I wasn't making it run and or gallop or whatever you call it. And so he slapped it, said hee-haw or whatever, and it took off at a dead sprint. And I started screaming like a girl. I mean, I made our little six-year-old sound like a man. I was screaming so high and so loud, I was scared to death. That's my experience on the ranch.
That's a wonderful, but as manly far as story.
It's my manliest story. I mean, it only gets worse from there. No, I think one of those is, and this is where maybe the pastor can come alongside too, is being willing to be vulnerable with your brothers and sisters in Christ and share when you need. I know my dad, he's, you know, not a rancher by any means. Can't even fix the toilet, but he is one that really will struggle to ever ask for help for any reason. And just being willing to say, hey, you know, hey, I need a little help with laying out the hay today or whatever it might be, and invite the pastor along or whatever to do that with you. I had a great experience doing that in one of the churches I served. But just finding ways to involve people in what you do, to just be around them and get to know them and spend some time with them, chewing the fat. Or is that what you say?
Yeah.
Is that a ranch thing?
Great.
Shooting the breeze, shooting the bull.
Yeah.
Somebody told
me
one time it's hard to make money in ranching when you're always shooting the bull. But
that's good.
Well, and I think, I mean, just in the New Testament alone, you know, we see men who were not pushovers by any stretch of the imagination. You know, I mean, several of the disciples were fishermen, which was, I mean, as manly a men's occupation as you could get in those days. And yet in the New Testament, we see the way that they humbled themselves, that they made community a priority. We certainly see that in Acts 2 as the description of the first church and the way that they met needs, the way that they met together, and just the way they cared for each other. And so we see, I think that's one of the most countercultural things we can do as believers is experience true community. Not just in rural contexts now, but everywhere, we are so isolated, you know, maybe due in large part because we have devices to always distract us from the world around us. And so being in authentic community with one another, it's going to feel awkward. It's going to feel unnatural to us because it is. And yet, in the Bible, we see that the church grew by leaps and bounds, in part because of the way they interacted with one another. And that made a difference to the world around them. You know, that doesn't mean that, you know, guys have to get together for 3 hours every Tuesday night and share their deepest, darkest secrets.
Their feelings.
Right, yeah, talk about their feelings. But just as simple as, you know, some of the most impactful Bible studies I've been a part of are breakfasts in a cafe with a bunch of ranchers who just opened the Bible and said, you know, we're just going to talk about this, and we'll go through a book of the Bible. And, you know, there may be some stuff that we don't understand, and we're okay with just saying, hey, I have no idea what he's talking about here. But there's an authentic attempt to develop that community, and I think over time we saw that happen. So, you know, you got to start somewhere. So, I mean, breakfast, you know, biscuits and gravy and a Bible is a good way to start, in my opinion. Yeah, lots of coffee.
Or waffles, I think Matt's got.
Yeah, waffles. Hey,
Matt likes waffles, yeah.
2,365 days as we record this.
Today.
Mm-hmm.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
I guess.
My only claim to fame.
I don't even understand. I have nothing to say about
that. The thing that blew my mind about that is that he also likes to run, and running and waffles, you know, like when I wrestled in high school, it was always don't eat waffles, don't eat pancakes, because you'll throw up on the mat,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, don't eat anything heavy.
You got to build up the tolerance.
I made it through 13 years of wrestling before I broke that rule, and then on my senior year, I wrestled and I ate pancakes that morning and I threw up on the mat. And so, yeah, I waffles and running doesn't seem to go.
That has a psychological effect against your opponent.
It does.
Though, right? I mean, if you barf all over them, I dare say you have an edge.
I will tap out. I'm out of there.
Yes. Yeah. And so that all connects very well to the struggle of community in rural contexts somehow, I'm sure. So, I was also one of the challenges I see just being out here is churches that are faithful to the gospel, and I think that's part of what your book is talking about is, you know, in chapter one, preaching, or the second chapter, I guess, is preaching the hallmark of that church, and how do we go about, or what are some of the hallmarks of churches that are faithful to the gospel, I guess?
Well, yeah, obviously preaching is foundational. Declaring the truth of the gospel and preaching the Bible would be the baseline. You know, other hallmarks, I mean, I don't want to steal Mark Dever's thunder and go through all his nine marks, but I highly recommend some of his resources, biblical church leadership, right? You know, observing the ordinances, the baptism, the Lord's Supper. not officially an ordinance, Matt.
But those
things that we see in Scripture, you know, so when you go through like Acts 2:42-47, we saw that they met together regularly. They worshiped together. They fellowshiped together. They prayed together. We see that there's biblical church leadership. We see they were gathered. They were devoted themselves to Scripture. And you'll never find a church that does those perfectly, right? I mean, even, you know, Mark Dever in Capitol Hill Baptist Church, I think even though he's the guy that's developed the marks of the church, he would say, you know, that there's no way they do those perfectly all the time. But I think the key is that we want to be biblical in our approach to church, and, you know, at least be asking the question, okay, when we meet together, are we meeting together just because we're like some holy social club, or are we meeting together because we want to gather to worship the creator of the universe as people who identify that we were sinners separated from God, who've been reconciled to God through his son, Jesus Christ. And that's the thing that unites us above all others.
And for us at Mayhill, we build it around three things and easy to remember ones with all beginning with the letter P, but prayer, preaching and praising. And so anything that doesn't fit in those, you know, announcements or whatever event is going on or potluck or any of that, that's always going to be after. But during the service, even if it's Father's Day, Mother's Day, Memorial Day, whatever, our focus is going to be on Christ and his word and all of the songs that we are going to sing, all of the prayers that we're going to pray, and the word obviously that's going to be preached is going to be built around that inerrant, infallible, and inspired word that is our authority. And so if we believe that, then we want our services then to follow in accordance with that through, you know, if you've got a baptism or you've got Lord's Supper, things like that we have that kind of prescribed for us how to do. And so it just makes it easy for me also as a pastor, when there's 1,000 different ways you can get pulled on a week or even on a Sunday morning as people are coming wanting to give an announcement or whatever it might be, that we've got to get started here at 11 o'clock. And, you know, after the service, we'll share some announcements or whatever. But we're going to focus right now on praising, praying, and preaching the word as we aim to glorify God as a church family, because we need it. And no matter what the week was like before or the week that's facing us, right now we need to take this time to focus on the gospel and his unchanging word.
So those are some really good keys to look for in a church that's faithful to the gospel. What if you don't have any nearby? What do you suggest? Do people drive? Do they find the closest church and try to change it from the inside out? Do they just download Kyle's sermons? I mean, what do they do?
Well, now I will say, don't do that one. The last one is definitely out. Find mine on Sermon Audio. Just search. No, I'm just kidding. That's a great question, because depending upon where you are, there are people at our church and it is probably even more extreme in some even more greater rural areas. There's that word again.
Yeah.
But we have people that will drive 72 miles one way or 35 the other. And that's something that, in our case, they don't have to do. There's some faithful churches in those towns that they serve. And so we encourage them to be a part of the closest one that they're going to be around. It's going to have faithful gospel preaching. And it might not be the worship style that you may like, even the sermon preaching. You know, if I was just going out on my own and I wasn't a preacher or whatever, and I was just looking for a church, I might have my preferences. Somebody's going to go verse by verse through books of the Bible. That's going to be my preference. But if they're still faithfully preaching the gospel and the key orthodox points of the gospel, virgin birth, all of that kind of stuff, and maybe if it's simple, And not as well rounded as Dr. Kyle Bierman would be, that's okay, you know. And one of the reasons that's okay for me is because as the husband, I'm called to be the spiritual leader of my house, and so there's a side that, in some sense, that I've got Monday through Saturday with them, and obviously Sunday too. That we're still going to be studying the word together. We're still going to be growing together in our worship times as a family, that in some sense, I'm not relying only on that 11 o'clock hour to be the only time of communion with the holy and righteous God and where I'm going to train up my children. And then I remember that and couple that with the testimony of Charles Spurgeon, who you probably couldn't have found a worse preacher to be saved under, you know, some fill-in guy that's pretty much just preaching, look to Christ and live over and over and over again, and he got saved, you know. And so maybe that's not going to be your steady diet, but at the end of the day, man, there's days where all I can do is look to Christ, you know, where life has been so tough that I'm just like, help. And so for me, that would be one thing, is if it might not fit all of the nine marks, if you will. And, you know, to use that as an example, that's not everybody's cup of tea or whatever. But if they're faithfully preaching the gospel, maybe not as deep as you would like, or maybe the music is a little different than you would like. Maybe you would prefer they not play the organ ungodly loud or whatever it might be. That might be the best place for you to be, one where you can build up some of the people that, you know, spiritually we might say are kind of beneath. Not in a prideful sense, but haven't grown as much as maybe you have, or you can just encourage that pastor, not so much to tell him how to do his job, but at the same time, just encourage him, love on him, pray for him. And, you know, I say with our folks a lot, sometimes you're going to get the pastor that you pray for.
Yeah, that's right.
And, you know, and so keep praying for me, and, you know, don't pray that I die. Like, that's not what I would like, but pray that I continue to grow and that I get a better faithful preacher, that I continue to grow in my relationship, all of that. And so if you're in the middle of nowhere and there is this church out there that doctrinally is sound and is faithful with evangelism, all of those kinds of things that may not check every single box that you like, that's probably the best place for you to be. And then my second one, I don't know what Kyle's answer is going to be, is if you're asking that question and there isn't one around there, plant it.
Yeah.
You know, start it, even if it's starting in your, you know, at the ranch house and just with some of the people helping you out on the farm, starting a Bible study with them and gathering together for worship one time a week or whatever and see what God can do through that and maybe spread out to a couple other ranchers. You know, one of the summer folks at our church has shared with us a ministry where, or it's not, it's our Dennis was the one that shared it with me. The guy that all of the cow farmers, he has paid himself, he's paid to get evangelists to go in there to these cow farms that are Spanish only and just to start Bible studies for. Yeah. And so sometimes it's just being creative of what your context is. Yeah. And if it's not there and you can't drive it and you're not going to fly it every Sunday, start it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, in certain cases, drive is certainly the answer. You know, I think back to when I was in Clayton. I mean, folks would drive in 50 miles because we were the closest church. I mean, literally, Clayton was the closest church to their house, and it was 45, 50 minutes away. Fight for change, that's certainly an option, right? I mean, if there's a church that is not gospel-centered, it's the only church in the area, sure, go in and fight to reclaim the biblical center in that church. And then I agree with Matt. If all else fails, plant a church. And I don't think that has to be a we don't have to think of that as a complicated thing other than, you know, look at what the believers did in Acts 2 again. They gathered together. They devoted themselves to Scripture. They devoted themselves to fellowship, to prayer. We see them observing the ordinances as Paul commands, baptism and the Lord's Supper, and so I mean I would say that's maybe the extreme option, right? I mean, where, you know, if there is absolutely no gospel based church that's within driving distance of your house that is not it's not feasible for you to go and gather with another body on a regular basis, then yeah, gather some neighbors and plant a church. But I would say, you know, as much as possible, we want to connect to existing churches that maybe aren't, like Matt said, you know, maybe don't have all of our preferences or aren't our cup of tea when it comes to worship music or even preaching style or something like that. And I just think in those cases, you know, we have to rethink our list of non-negotiables, right? So we want a church to be biblically based, but that doesn't mean that the preaching style is always going to be what I would prefer it to be. And that's where we have to weigh our preferences against, you know, do my preferences define what is biblically faithful? And I think in a lot of cases they don't. So it's tough, you know, and that's a reality even here in Alamogordo that we don't deal with, even though we are still technically a rural area of about 35,000 people here in town, but we have 70 churches. So, I mean, you're going to be able to find at least a gospel based church, and that's what I'm fighting for here, right? To say, at least if there's nothing else, we're going to be biblically centered as a church, even though there's probably some things that we need to improve on. But in rural church, in extreme rural churches or rural communities, you don't have obviously 70 churches in a town of 1,000 people. At least I hope not. That would create its own set of issues as well if you're looking at that many churches in a community.
Right. Yep. And you know, that's where did the churches that are there come from? You know, at some point somebody started them. The picture that hangs in the foyer of the church that I'm at here, Prairie Home Church, is them meeting in a sod roofed hut in the 20s, you know, and, you know, the other thing that came to mind while you guys were talking was that we think of the grittiness of the, American frontiersmen, you know, and how gritty those people were. I just went and did a visit the other day at this lady's house, and she had seven kids in an 8x22 trailer house with no running water, you know. And I mean, and then you go back to the sod roof days, and those guys were even more gritty than that. And that goes back to kind of that tendency that we have here in the West to be rugged individualists, and how people, you know, it's not an admission of a fault to say I need help or I need community with other people. And so people should, you know, the people that are featured in the New Testament as in need of community, they're even more gritty than the frontiersmen of the 1800s and the 1900s. And so these people weren't weak. They were humans who recognized their need for help in this life to successfully battle sin and cling to Jesus. And I guess that's about all we can ask.
Yeah, that's right.
Matt, you touched on something that I think is important, that I grew up going to a mainline denominational church, didn't hear much there, wasn't paying attention, got saved in a broadly evangelical church and pastored there for 12 years. And it wasn't until I got introduced to some Facebook groups that talked about family worship that I even heard the word family worship. And so I think that that's something that I would like to introduce people to, as being a pastor in their own home and shepherding their own household well with tools like family worship. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So I did it the wrong way early on, in that I was always looking for the great Bible study that we're going to go through, and we're going to learn all of these songs, and it's going to be this wonderful kumbaya moment every night of our life. And the first thing I had to realize is that kids are unpredictable and depraved, and all of the things that you might dream for in a calm, worshipful evening is probably not going to happen. And so what we tried to do was just simplify it. And when our kids were younger, we used the Jesus storybook Bible, and the slogan from it is every story whispers His name, mm-hmm. and it walks through all of the or most of the key Bible verses from the beginning to the end, and specifically with Jesus's life and ministry and so forth, and it was just a really simple way that all of them were old enough to either read it themselves or with a little help could read it, or I would read it. And then usually I would grab the Bible if we had a little extra time, and I would read it from the Bible. And then we would just talk for a little bit, let them, you know, were there any questions that they had? You know, what did they like about it? What was cool about it? I couldn't believe that God could create it out of nothing. You know, that was really neat. And I said, yeah, you know, when we create something, we have to use something. You know, we've got to use, you know, wood, or we've got to, you know, add tile, or we've got to use marker to draw something on the paper. But God can do it out of complete and total nothing, and can create out of nothing. And so that just kind of blows their mind. And so they're excited about it because it's on their level. And then I can answer the questions that they may have or try to. And then as far as singing, like the old pipe dreams of getting out the guitar, and maybe you've got even candlelight there, and you're just going to worship Jesus, and the string breaks, and then you curse right in front of your kids or something. It doesn't work. And so we've got one of the probably like three or four copies of the Baptist hymnals that I've stolen from different churches over the years. Accidentally, I promise. But so we'll grab one of those and give one to the kids, and I'll just let them pick a song that they want to sing, and out of the hymnal, and we'll just sing it there, Church of Christ style, and just sing it, just our voices, and kind of talk through those, and we pray. And one of my favorite parts of all of it is, you know, as great as it is to read through scripture, all that kind of stuff, and nothing compares to that. I love hearing their heart for their students and their teachers and the different things that they're dealing with. Because sometimes, you know, when you sit them down, how's your day at school or whatever? Oh, it's good. And what'd you learn today? Well, we did math. But then you ask about prayer and you hear that, you know, their buddy, you know, Joe had fallen and broken his leg or something like that. And you can pray for more sincere needs. And then you kind of learn how their day is going. Yeah. And then for us, that's been it. So that was a long way to say Jesus storybook Bible and a hymnal. Yeah. And we've got Insta family worship. Kyle, what do y'all do?
Well, so we started this year before school. Well,
no, you don't.
Before school in the morning. Before
they play Fortnite all together.
Before I come into work, we started this year going through reading through The Passion of Jesus Christ by John Piper, which is it's a book that's about 15 years old. It's 50 daily readings, about 2 pages, really short. And so, you know, you figure, I mean, in the course of a school week, you know, 4 or 5 days, depending on a week, you're going to get 2 months, two and a half months out of that. It's just really simple. I mean, it's the tagline of that book is 50 Reasons Jesus Came to Die. So it's all about, you know, why would Jesus come to earth? And that sparks some really interesting conversations with our kids, and also some vocabulary, because John Piper likes to use some academic terms. And that's now my kids are 5th and 6th grade. So, you know, I wouldn't use that with a kindergartner. I would not recommend John Piper for a kindergartner. But for our kids now, that works. And it sparks some really good discussions in the morning.
I sparked a good discussion on Sunday. This isn't about family worship.
Oh, goodness.
But I was preaching through 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 8 through 10, and about, you know, braided hair and all that kind of stuff. And I said, you know, and I was given the context and so forth, that they were dressing like prostitutes. And I just made the comment, like, off the cuff, like, if you don't know what a prostitute is, ask your mom or dad on the way home. And all afternoon, my phone is buzzing from parents. asking mom or dad, what's a prostitute? But one of them, the best story, I don't know if I told you this one, but one is driving out, and as sincere as could be, said, what's a substitute? And I said, what? And said, what's a substitute? You know, pastor said we're supposed to ask what's a substitute. And so the backstory there is, this family is actually, they had just adopted these 2 girls from Mexico. And so English is a little different for them right now. And so they're still catching on or whatever. So this was like a new word to them. And so they got out of that awkward conversation about
very easily. Yeah.
To just say substitute is
goodness gracious.
So, yeah, that's what you can do. Ranchers,
we left to force the
family worship issue.
Yeah.
Go tonight
ask
and ask
awkward questions.
Ask about the Trinity, or, you know, how did God create the world, or whatever.
Yeah.
Give them
I've heard it said that every kid at bedtime becomes a thirsty theologian. They want to drink and they want to talk about the weightier matters of the law. I really appreciate you guys' time today. My goal here is for people who hear this, ranchers who hear this, to go out and buy a copy of your book to give to their pastor, and to just to be an encouragement to your pastor. It's not, the book isn't a critique to existing churches. It is an encouragement for pastors to think about some different ways to approach ministry, and I really, really appreciated the tone and the tenor of the book. I want to give you guys an opportunity to share where people can get the book. But before I do that, I want to flip this a little bit and ask you, how can rural Christians serve their pastor?
Well, what I said earlier is praying. You know, one of the things that it's easy to forget, especially in the day of social media. So this might be a little different in your neck of the woods, but for ours, you know, most of our people are on social media, and you typically see pastors that have it all together. Mm. You know, hey, great morning in the study, or hey, we had 4 people saved this week, or hey, you know, this or that. And we don't often, at least those that are maybe smart, we don't often throw up on, that could mean 2 things, but throw on Twitter, hey, you know, this lady just chewed me out for whatever. You know, we don't throw something like that out there. Or you know, I dealt with a attempted suicide this summer with a member of our church, and some other things going on with some church families and so forth. We can't really always talk about that, and so we appear to have it all together. And ultimately, we know that God is holding us together, but we need all the prayer that we can get. Not just for Sunday morning at 11 o'clock or whatever time your worship service is, but during the week. And so as you think about it, you know, at the beginning of the week, your pastor is probably thinking that he bombed the sermon on Sunday, or maybe attendance was down or whatever. Pray that God will just encourage him, that somebody will come alongside and lift him up and just pray for him. As you're getting towards the end of the week, pray that God's going to be working in his heart as he's preparing to preach that message. And just as important, the people that will be hearing it. Start praying that God's going to move in their hearts and just prepare their hearts to receive the word that God has given to him. And so that's the biggest thing. I mean, there's the tangible stuff, like offer to watch the kids or something so we can go out to have dinner or gift card to Starbucks or here to Plateau Espresso, you know, things like that. There's that kind of stuff too. But for me, I would take prayer every day of the week and twice on Sunday because, as I said kind of jokingly earlier, you're going to get the pastor that you pray for.
Yeah.
And just pray for him.
And I would add, I mean, obviously echoing Matt's prayer, offering to watch the kids. If you have a pastor with a young family, that's huge. One of the best blessings that we received when we were in a small community was a family who every year that we were there gave us a quarter of a beef.
Oh, yeah.
And for one thing, I mean, store-bought beef is so inferior to fresh beef.
Elk.
And okay, yeah, or you know, if you're extra specially blessed, yeah, you can get elk. But
I was blessed and highly flavored last year.
don't underestimate the blessing of things like beef or produce. You know, so I mean, if you have a garden and take your pastor fresh squash, fresh tomatoes. Those really were a blessing, and it wasn't the gift. It was just, wow, these folks really, like, they really appreciate me. They think about me when it comes to, you know, when they slaughter their cow. Hey, we're going to send a quarter of this to the pastor's family. If it's a small family, I mean, that quarter of a beef fed us for almost a year.
We've still got about half of the elk left.
Yeah. So come up with, I mean, those are maybe some more creative ways, but you can really bless your pastor in doing some small things that really just remind him, hey, you know, we care about you. We're thinking about you often. And then, yeah, if you pray for him, let him know that, you know, I'm praying for you. You know, because you think it's weird when a pastor texts somebody and says, hey, I'm praying for you. Sometimes it really blows our socks off when people text us and say, I'm praying for you today.
Yeah.
That's a huge blessing.
There's just always those emails that come through that, you know, pastor, I need to meet with you.
Yeah.
Pastor, I need, and like, we have like almost like pastoral PTSD or whatever, like, because so many of those have gone very badly. Like, one of the things you can do is just send the note. This doesn't begin like that in any way, but just, hey, love your brother and praying for you. I hope the family's well. Just something that is clearly an encouragement that you're praying for him and so forth. So, if you can't give us $1 million, praying is a close second.
For sure. Really appreciate you guys' time today. Like I said, I want people to go out and buy the book and give it to their pastors. How can people get a hold of the book?
So the book's available on Amazon, which delivers even to Mayhill. So I think that Amazon delivers almost anywhere now. It's available, published through Acoma Press. You just go to Amazon and search Replanting Rural Churches. It's available in paperback or in Kindle format as well.
And if you buy the paperback, the Kindle is like $3.
$2 or $3. That's right. Yeah.
So you can keep the Kindle and give the paperback away.
Yeah, that's right. There you go.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Well, and how can people check out your podcast?
You probably shouldn't.
Okay.
But not anotherbaptistpodcast.com. So just the words, not anotherbaptistpodcast.com, because the joke was we weren't going to be another Baptist podcast, and then we ended up being just another Baptist podcast.
Well, thank you guys for your time today. Anything we missed? Anything else you want to share?
I don't think so. Thanks for having us on, man. It's been a blessing.
Absolutely. Well, it was a good time there talking to them, and I would encourage you to take advantage of this opportunity to pick up their book and to share it with your pastor. As I said, not a critique of existing ministry, but just an opportunity to have them have a really useful tool, a short, easy read. Read it in an hour or so, and just some practical tips at the end of each chapter. So I'd encourage you to go out to the show notes page for today, workingcows.net/104, and check out the links that will be there on some resources for family worship, as well as links to Matt and Kyle's podcast and their book that was recently released. So check out the show notes page for today, workingcows.net/104. I know I promised you an accent today. today, and I got you some Southern accents, but we didn't quite get connected with Graham Reese yet. I'm hoping that will be up for next week's episode with 105, but if not, I have a very fascinating look into Chinese agriculture with somebody from Johann Zietzmann's texting group who he asked me to just call him Alex. So one or the other will be out next week for episode 105 of the Working Cows podcast. I really look forward to sharing those with you real soon.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.